Have you ever found yourself staring at a deep blue ocean and feeling oddly calm, or catching a flash of bright red and getting a little jolt? What if that isn't just a mood, but chemistry firing in your brain?
Good question. I had that happen at home. I painted a room this big, cheerful yellow and ended up feeling on edge, not irritated at the paint job, physically keyed up. It drove home for me that color hits below preference. It's visceral.
As a screenwriter, I lean on that constantly. We build palettes to steer emotion before a character speaks. Cold, sterile blues for isolation, warm golds for nostalgia, a quiet. I'm still chasing the machinery behind the language, though.
That's where I want to go with you, the neuroscience, the brain's emotional palette, the dance between light on the retina and the neurotransmitters shaping mood.
Let's trace the loop. Dopamine and serotonin shift how the world looks, and the colors we take in nudge that chemistry right back. Feels like a feedback system.
You see it everywhere, the shade a company picks to earn trust, or how design and therapy try to lift mood. After this, you and I are going to notice it nonstop.
About that loop, is the brain reacting to color before we even form the thought, I like that blue?
That's what EEG studies suggest. People stare at fields of color, and you get a little spike when a favorite shows up fractions of a second before they consciously focus on it.
So attention arrives early, like the welcome party shows up before the guest list.
Exactly. The brain has already registered and leaned toward it, which means a product can tug you preconsciously with color long before the label does any work.
That tracks with how we talk about visual hierarchy, put the bright cue where we want the eyes to land, though I've usually treated it as a conscious path.
Designers go deeper with saliency. They match the most arresting hue to the action they want. The buy now button gets the shouty color. The unsubscribe link adds in low contrast gray.
You're defending that pretty hard for someone I wasn't attacking.
Fair. I'm not saying it's sorcery. Context rules. Menthol reads green or blue, paint it blistering orange, and the clash screams louder than anything orange means.
So it's about meeting or deliberately breaking what people expect?
Right. If you're an off-brand cola, you hug the leader's red to say, same thing here. If you're a new tech player, you might go magenta or lime to announce difference and snag that pre-attentive glance.
And once that link forms, it hardens. Think of Crayolu. The logo has shifted plenty, but that green and gold box is the beacon parents scan for in the aisle.
Absolutely. Smell locks it in too. The olfactory bulb connects straight to the amygdala and hippocampus, emotion and memory. Pair that with the Crayola green and gold, and you've welded a memory trace that's tough to overwrite.
It's a sensory cord. Strike the color and the wax smell rings, plus that little sharpener on the back. Say it again, the sharpener.
Ha! One cue, whole memory lights up. You do the same in film with that slightly faded amber for flashbacks. After a couple uses, people learn this hue means we're in the past without anyone saying it.
I've always treated it as the unwritten rule of the baby aisle.
Here's the twist. A little over a century ago, guidance ran the other way. Pink for boys, seen as a softer red. Blue for girls, considered delicate. The flip didn't really lock in until the 1940s, pushed by manufacturers and ads. I'm blanking on the trade journal name, but the advice exists.
That relabels everything. The law of baby gifts is basically a mid-century marketing choice.
Mostly, yes. Infants may lean toward primaries, but the gender link is taught and rehearsed blanket to birthday.
And once it's taught, it loops. Familiar toys breed preference, which then looks like natural taste. Self-reinforcement dyed pink.
And it gives storytellers shorthand. Put a man in a pink shirt, and you've made a statement. Confidence, convention busting, maybe dandy without a line of dialogue.
But it also fences people in half the emotional range, cordoned off by an inheritance that's arbitrary.
It can. And it shows how biology meets culture at every glance. We're not just reacting to wavelengths, we're reacting to the stories welded onto those wavelengths.
And perception stack, physics and neurology at the base, then messy tiers of history, habit, and commerce reshaping the taste at the top.
And you never get to eat layers separately. It's all mixed with every look. Which brings me back to warm versus cool, culture or something deeper.
It feels elemental. Fiery reds and icy blues. Sunlight versus overcast. Primal, almost.
There's sight language for it. Warms tend to feel like they advance, cools tend to recede. Hence the red accent wall that tightens a room and the pale blue that opens it up.
We lean on that in visual storytelling. Warm wardrobe to pop a hero against a cool, detached world, or mute someone in blues and grays to push them away.
But saturation blurs the rule. Warm doesn't equal exciting by default. A dark, dull brown is warm, and nobody calls it amped. A lot of the punch is contrast, not category.
So it's a tendency, not a statute, and contrast pulls big weight, which drags us to the eternal headache, harmony. Is that actually a thing?
That's the million-dollar itch. Complementaries for spark, analogs for calm, fine, but taste swerves with person, culture, light, even what's in style.
Which is why a nursery in clashing neon orange and acid green just feels wrong. We read those as energy, maybe hazard, not rest.
Exactly. And the research says response moves with personality, culture, the room's lighting, and current trends.
So palettes that once screamed sophistication, I'm seeing avocado and harvest gold, now read like pure time capsule.
Time drips the target.
What fascinates me is how artists hack around the chaos. Take the split primary palette, carry warm and cool versions of red, yellow, and blue to mix lively secondaries. It's a way to wrangle messy pigments into something predictable.
Practice outruns theory. The story blames impure paints, but the trick works because it edges closer to true magenta and cyan for subtractive mixing.
So every tidy rule, blue calms, complements harmonize, breaks under exceptions and context.
That's the part one care about most. This isn't a vending machine where you drop in a color and get a guaranteed mood. It's an ecosystem. Chemistry is real, but memory, culture, and situation keep shaping it.
Which means the leverage isn't hunting a universal happy color. It's reading the stack brain, culture, context, and playing them on purpose. Not a master key, a practiced instrument.
And once you learn to play it, you see it everywhere. Colors aren't backdrop. They're steering your experience in real time. After you notice, you can't unknow it.